perfectionist. So my husband kept saying, just open an Instagram. Of course, open an Instagram. Open a WhatsApp. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, if I'm going into it, he's like, what is it? It's just whatever you're doing there, just do there. And I was just so hesitant. And it really is your prayer, because that day, this is not like me at all. So I just sat there like, you know what? I've been getting messages. And if I'm keeping anyone on Instagram, and your message like stuck in my mind, like, I'm keeping someone on this. Like, I definitely should not be doing this. And I just, it literally, I didn't plan anything. I just, like, whatever I posted, I just opened it. And I'm like, okay, if there's two people, three people, one person, who cares? And it was really from you. So it was all you, I really have to say, because that message stuck with me. And I was like, I don't need it to be perfect, just go. So thank you. Thank you for that. So a few people that I met before have been following, and it's really nice to meet people in person. Some people that don't know me or don't follow and wanted a little bit of background before we start. Everything that I say is coming from a place and a story that I've experienced and that I've lived, and we all have our story, and we all have something that, you know, marked us so that we could share with others. So the reason why I find that important to mention is because we will touch a little bit also where parts of my story brought me to the content that I'm sharing with you. But Torah and Judaism and connection to Hashem, it's not a subject. Because if it was a subject, anyone could come up, memorize something. I mean, ChatGPT today could just do it all. So it's where it's moving fast. So it's not a subject. Because if I came up and spoke as a subject, it wouldn't get that feeling that I get from probably 99% of people. Was like, how did you know that's what I needed to hear? Well, it's exactly what I needed to hear. And the reason it's getting that effect, it's not me. It's because it's coming from a place where it's not a subject. It was a lifeline for me. It was in periods of my time, currently, past, future, whatever it is, that I used and that I held on to and I lived. And you know those feelings you can't explain? It's like, did you live that? Like, you can't put it into words, but it just touches someone else and you're like, how did I explain it? I don't know, I just did. Is because it's not a subject. It's really an emotion. It's a connection. It's a lifestyle. So anything that I share, I just want you to know that hopefully this won't be the last time we see each other. You do get to know me. You'll understand that everything I share is coming from a place of connection and something that I wrestled with. It's like I might be seeing the end of it, and I'm still growing, so it's definitely not the end. But meaning, I wrestled with that emotion. I wrestled with this content. This is not something like this. It's not theory. And I don't want us to keep it theory. So with that being said, we were going back and forth on what topic we can talk about, because Elul, Rosh Hashanah, there's just tons. We're in such a special time. To say that the king is in the field is the craziest thing. We're used to it, and it sounds like this like cute line, but it's like literally the king is walking in the fields. It's mind-blowing. And that being said, with all the topics we went through, we wanted to talk about how to build a muscle during challenging times. How do we use our pain? How do we rise? So that's going to be the theme today. And it's very deeply rooted in Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah, we talk about it as the Day of Judgment. But when you actually look at the prayers, you look at the Torah portion that we read, which we're going to focus on a little bit, it's not that much fear. It's not that much of like punishment and rewards. It's like, it doesn't sound so like judgment. Some parts, yes. But in general, the Torah portion that's chosen is to talk about the Akedah, one of the Torah portions. And this episode that we all know is something that I want to focus on a little to introduce the topic. The Akedah was something very special. And we know the ending to the story. But Avraham, in it, he did not know the ending. He was standing in real time of what was happening. And we're told that it was for 3 days that he saddled his donkey, brought his son, and it was a 3-day journey to get to the final destination of the Akedah and actually go and sacrifice his son. So let's forget the ending. Let's stand in it in real time with Avraham. 3 days is very long when you're going through something like that. I know some of us in our own stories, we have way longer than 3 days also. But in this specific story, he had 3 days where he knew what's going to happen. So imagine 3 days of walking with your son with the heaviest knowledge a father or a parent can carry. It's a lot. And for 3 days, he had to register. How am I going to explain this to Sarah? This is everything I've waited for. This is everything I've prayed for. This is my miracle. And for 3 days, he had to just keep internal. Every step was one step closer to losing all of that. And this is the story that Hashem chose to read on the Day of Judgment, because Hashem is telling us that in my eyes, this isn't what judgment is. In the finite world, we look at judgment, we picture a court case, we picture a judge sitting on the, you know, balancing things out, looking at all the facts and saying, okay, well, this outweighs that, let's go, that's the final judgment. And yet Hashem is saying, no, I'm choosing the Akedah because I want you to know that it's the process of surrender, the process of being completely in the dark. It's that story where Avraham walked into places no one saw. No one saw those 3 days. We see the ending. Nobody saw those 3 days. Nobody knew the battle and the wrestle he was having with himself, with Hashem, with his relationship. Nobody saw that. It was just Avraham and himself with Hashem. And Hashem is saying, this is what the day of judgment is. It's not fear. It's a wrestle with me, a personal and close, up close wrestle with me and surrender to me. And every Rosh Hashanah, from then on, Hashem says, I look at Avraham's journey and I get off my throne of judgment and I go onto my throne of mercy. Avraham did all that until today. We get to show up Rosh Hashanah and it protects us that he literally gets up of judgment and goes to mercy. So this isn't such a faraway story for us. This isn't, you know, the details might feel ancient and different and sacrificing in a korban, but the emotions, those are ours. He had waiting, he had silence, he had prayers that seemed to like now all of a sudden dissolve. He had dreams that felt like he was, these are all regular emotions that we have. And when we look at every story in the Torah from the lens of, wow, these are people, these are stories, these are feelings, they didn't know the endings, we can also start to really realize that we're getting a lens into the lives and the thought processes of tzaddikim. So here in the Akedah, we get the thought process of Avraham. And that's why when we come into Rosh Hashanah, it's not fear. It's where Hashem is whispering, your pain has a purpose. Pain can break you, but with me, pain is going to build you. And I want your pain to become a muscle. Rosh Hashanah is about taking that pain, creating an Akedah. It's about realizing that our pain and our struggling and our dark moments can become a muscle that's strong enough to carry not only ourselves, but all of Am Yisrael, like Avraham did. So a little bit of my personal story that I did mention, and the reason I ever talk about anything personal is because it does show you that where I cultivated these ideas. And again, we want to stay away from theory and really put it into a lifeline. The reason why my page that some of you follow, it started was because when I lost my mom. And I remember when I lost my mom, I really didn't have tools. I didn't have tools. I mean, it's just grief. It's just, I was 21, turning 21. And I was just, I was on like a spiritual high. I had gotten back from seminary a year before, but we were in hospitals for 2-3 years already. So it was just like, what now? All my connection to Hashem up until that point, in a positive way, was really around my mom. I went to seminary and I came back. She already got sick. And it was like everything I learned there was like right away applying into a life message right away. Like my challenge was there. Where there was like no breathing time. And I remember just thinking like, okay, this is just like survival mode. 6 years later is I lost my father. And I remember that when I walked into mourning for my father, I thought, okay, this is going to be a world I've touched upon it already, not that it's smaller. And it was not at all. It was a complete stranger. I was obviously a different person 6 years later, different connection to Hashem, different journey, different parts of my life. I was in the dating world and everything just shattered. And now I thought, if I thought I was in survival before, this is survival. I was like, okay, every day was really, how do I just make it through the day? Positively, I was a very positive person. I loved Hashem. I didn't necessarily have any feelings of like anger, which I would totally understand someone who did. But that's just my journey. I didn't. It was just like numbness. Like, it was just nothing. It's just, let's try to just stay above water. That was my goal. And that's when, and the main reason, by the way, for that was because it wasn't only just losing my father. It was like, it was that last piece that was connecting me to my mom, my last parental figure, obviously. And like, it was like a safety was just like pulled. And I'm like, now what? Like, that was my last like balance in this world that I finally found again. And that's where I heard from Rabbi Wallerstein, and it changed everything for me. And he taught that pain is not something we want to survive. It's something that when it's used right, it transforms you. And it actually becomes the deepest understanding of yourself and of others. So he says that if we let it, it's the birthplace of sensitivity, of strength, of a deeper you. And it becomes a well of empathy. And it's a sensitivity that allows you to see others in a different way. How I explain pain or any trauma that we go through in life is literally like you're putting on a new lens onto your eyes and you just can't take them off. Sounds overwhelming. It sounds like it's negative. It's actually very positive. As deep as the pain is, you're putting on this lens that now you just can't unsee. You have a greater sensitivity. Like for me, it was like, I know how fragile life can be. I know how every moment, I know what it means to ask someone for advice and they want just your best, like a parent. Like, you can't unsee these things. It's a lens that you're putting on and you just can't take off. And you begin to see everything else around you differently. And that's when you have that lens and you're in tune with that lens, life doesn't just continue. We're not just moving past the pain. We're using the pain and life begins to deepen, not just continue. We don't want to just continue. We don't want to just survive. Because remember, like we said, pain without purpose breaks us. Pain with purpose builds us. And that's where I understood that Judaism is not teaching us to cope. We're not learning to say, I survived. Judaism teaches you to shape your pain, to use your pain, that you can look back and say, this pain shaped me into someone I never knew I could become. And honestly, I wouldn't be that person without it. Would I choose grief again? It's the hardest question to answer because obviously my answer would be no. But would I be who I am today? Also no. So, and that's where Rabbi Wallerstein explains the wound starts to close. And that's where we actually could heal and not just cope and survive. We want to heal. And that's when the first time since my loss, both losses, I was able to shift and realize my pain can hold more. Pain is a muscle. And it's the beginning of that muscle. It's a new ground. It's fresh. And that's why it's so hard, but it's a muscle. And when we work at it, you stop asking yourself, what if this never changes? Because that's really what was just pounding my head. What if it's just always going to be like this? And I started saying, what if this is changing you? What's it building inside me? Because the struggle is not always about getting out of the struggle. It's about who you're becoming inside it. And that's probably why my feeling and my connection is why Hashem chose the Akedah for Rosh Hashanah, is because he's showing us that judgment isn't about the polished parts of your life. We feel like Rosh Hashanah is like, yes, the prep is coming and we get to synagogue and a lot of us like to wear white and bright colors and we're there and we feel just so like on the spiritual high for sure. But he's not always asking you for the polished parts of your life. He's telling you, look what I chose. Abraham had a lot of polished parts of his life he could have chose too. He didn't choose that. He chose the Akedah. He chose 3 days of silence, of darkness, of not knowing. He didn't have something like someone telling you it's going to be okay, there's going to be a miracle. Nothing. He was risking it all. He couldn't even share it with his wife. He couldn't let it out to anyone. And that's what Hashem is telling us. He says the steps that you took when you can't see the ending, the steps that like you really had to force yourself to find Hashem in, that's what I want you to remember on Rosh Hashanah. That's what I want you to come forward with. Those steps, they count. And those are the steps that rise up to Shemayim and literally lift me from my throne of judgment to my throne of mercy. Hashem is telling us this. And that's the message, one of the messages of Rosh Hashanah is that your pain is not meant to be just pain. It's there to carry. It's there to hold more. And it could hold blessing for everyone around you and for our whole nation. And that's what I want us to step into today. It's to look back on the chapters, either that we're currently in, that we've previously been in, that we didn't sign up for. The chapters that you look at and say, no, I did not choose that. I did not dream of this. I didn't ask for this. And to realize that maybe those weren't the endings of the story. Maybe we're developing the ending. And maybe we're in the beginning of something that's being formed. So the first part is, now we obviously want to get the answer to this, is how do we build that muscle? Before we even start that, we have to ask ourselves, how does Hashem see a woman? When he designed us, he created us as a woman. What was his vision? And it's super clear. He tells us in many different ways. We're going to touch upon only a few today. But he literally tells us exactly how. And when we understand how he sees us, we could step into that role confidently. Because if Hashem, someone grants you $1 million, but you have no idea, and you're walking around like, I have nothing to my name, you don't know. The biggest gift that he's like, wait, but I told you. And these are things you're going to see. I'm not telling you anything necessarily new. Most of it is things that we actually read every day or know, and we just haven't internalized it, that this is Hashem telling us, I made you this way. So the first thing is Shlomo HaMelech composed Eshet Chayil. We read this every week. We read Eshet Chayil, and it's, if you break down every single midah in there, you'll get a very good description of what his vision was of us. But we're going to focus on only one of them. Shlomo HaMelech compares a woman to the strength of a pearl. Not gold, not diamond. And we see in many areas of the Torah, even they chose to compare compare valuable things to materials they use in the Beit HaMikdash. And yet when it came to the woman, even the materials in the Beit HaMikdash, he did not use to compare. He specifically chose pearls. And why is that? If you study how a pearl is formed, you're going to understand the vision that he had. Pearls don't start out beautiful. They don't begin with a sparkle. They don't begin shining. They begin with pain. Pearls are actually the only jewel that doesn't come from the ground. If you look at diamonds or any other rubies, all these things, when you use the appropriate method, it doesn't mean that they're easy to come out, but they're planted in the ground or wherever it is, and when you use the appropriate method, you can pull them out at any time. A pearl is not something that you can just mine. It's something that has to be made. And how? It's through irritation, through discomfort. An oyster has a very soft skin inside. And when something intrudes inside to its soft skin, and usually it's a grain of sand, it irritates it. It's the complete opposite of its texture, and it's rubbing against it and scrubbing. And what happens is that foreign thing that enters into its soft flesh, the oyster responds. And layer after layer, it takes that painful invader, this foreign substance, and starts putting a layer and a layer and a layer. It lets out a layer from itself. And what's this layer called? It turns into the mother of pearl. It keeps going, and it's a long process. It's not something short. And therefore, what ends up happening at this end of the process, we get a natural pearl. A natural pearl is the result of an internal reaction to external pain. A pearl is not the result of perfection. It's the result of how something holy was formed around a place that was once hurt. And that's Hashem saying, that's you. That's the woman. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech compares us to the strength of pearls. He's saying an Eshet Chayil is not someone we could find. That's why he says, Mi'imsa. He says, we can't find her. She needs to be formed. It's in our baseline. It's in our foundation. But you need to nurture it. And it's not in comfort, but in conflict. It's not in ease. It's in endurance. And it's not by being handed the perfect life. And we all pray for smooth and comfort lives. And we should. But it's by building from the one, from the unexpected life. That's where this pearl is formed. And Rav Hunter would always say, the challenges of life are the only way to produce great people. A big reframe for me is that happiness does not equal smooth and easy. We're in a world of perfectly curated content all the time. We think we see everyone's lives, and we know we don't, but yet emotionally we're like, but it looks so perfect, and she has it all together, and it's not even from a place of jealousy. It's like, am I doing something wrong? I fall into this all the time. That's one of the reasons of getting off Instagram, like you said. And it's such a hard balance because we think that this is happiness. Judaism, happiness does not equal easy. Happiness equals purpose. That's not always so easy. That's not always comfortable. And that's what builds us. And it took me a long time. It's not like this mode on, now we heard it and it's like a nice line. It really took me time that while I was going through things to out loud say to myself, I'm happy. And it felt so funny at the beginning because I'm like, this is the furthest thing from feeling happy. But happiness equals purpose. And that's why no one can ever take your happiness, because it can be built and found anywhere. You can build purpose from anywhere. So there's a story by Rabbi Yadid. And he says that a true story, he once got a call from a woman that had recently gotten married a week ago. And he says, listen, it was the mother speaking. And she said, I need you to speak with my daughter. She's having a little issue. We're not part of the community. We're not religious. We're not like, we respect religion. But this is a decision that she wants a rabbi to, you know, weigh in on. And so she comes into his office and she says, listen, I was married a week ago. I'm asking you to give me the approval for a divorce. Divorce, what happened? And she was super respectful, super kind. And she says, listen, when I married my husband, we dated for years. He knew nothing about Judaism, and we always respected it. We were, you know, I could say maybe a little traditional, a little spiritual. And all of a sudden, I don't know who he met, what he did. He's going to synagogue every day. He's starting to learn. It's fine. It's not what I signed up for. I feel left behind. I'm in like this new bubble of like, I have to respect what he's doing, but I have no connection to this. And I want him to grow, and I want to grow how I want to grow. And that's it. Like, let him just, this is the direction he wants to take. And it's not where I'm going. And he says, you're totally right. He said, he really says, Rabbi Yadid says, I really didn't know what to tell her because it's true. You didn't sign up for that. That's not what you asked for. That's not what you dated. That's not what you married. And he looks at her and he says, before you take this decision, I will grant it to you. If you really feel like it's going to give your consciousness, like that the rabbi said yes, your logic makes perfect sense. I'm not going against it. But I want to share with you one story of the opposite side. Nothing to do with where you're holding. I want to show you the other side and then let you take that decision. And he says that there was this girl from a very respectable family of tzaddikim. Everyone in their family was big, big gadol hadors. And it's a true story. And she went to the best seminaries. She had the best rebbeim. She was just one of those quality girls all around. She asked for one thing when she started entering the shidduch world. She said, I don't have any criteria. The only thing I want is someone who's learning all day. I want to support him. I have the koach for it. For me, that's a bracha. If I see him learning, I feel like that's what I want. Everything else, I don't care. Find me something that fits exactly that. And her family is searching and all the shidduchim pour in. And finally, this one match comes up and they go out and she's like, it's perfect. The family's matched. Everything was good. They get married. A week into the marriage, he comes up to her and he says, listen, I have to share something with you. And I probably should have shared this earlier, but here I am. He says, I grew up in a home that was always religious, always everything, and I respected it. He was one of the top kollel people, everything. He was really equivalent in terms of like how she was. It was everything. And he says, listen, I've been doing it all these years with happiness for my parents. Now I'm married and I'm just, it's not what I want. I don't want to learn. I was really doing it all these years for my parents and with pure happiness, but now this is my life. And I don't want to learn anymore all day. One thing that she asked for, literally. One thing. And they're like a couple of weeks into marriage. And she's like, what? Her whole world turned upside down. And she stops and she looks at him and she says, no problem. And he says, like, where do we hold? He goes, no problem. I'm your Ezer Kenigdo. Of course, this is a very, very high level of how she's speaking. I'm not saying that this is how someone should go about. I definitely think there's room for getting advice and help and redirection. But in her situation, she says, I'm your Ezer Kenigdo. I'm here to help you. Whatever you choose to me is Kodesh Kodeshim, is the Holy of Holies, and I'm following you. You're sure? Like, I'm not learning. She goes, okay, but what are you going to do all day? He goes, I was thinking about it. She goes, okay, so I guess you'll work. Maybe I'll go learn or something, you know? He goes, no, you know, I thought about it. If I go work, it's going to embarrass my parents. You know, where we come from this side. So I already worked it out. I spoke to the kollel. They said out of shalom bayit and for my parents and for their honor, they're going to tell him that my parents that I'm learning and I'm going to stay home. He goes, you're going to stay home? He goes, yeah, I'm going to stay home. She goes, okay, I'll go out and work. You know, someone needs to bring in something. So she goes out and work. He's not learning. He's home. And this goes on for a few years. It wasn't like a week or a month process. It wasn't like a phase that he's just going to like get over. This was going on. And a few years later, they have their first child. They have twin boys. And now she's postpartum. She tells them, listen, I love to work. I'm postpartum. You need to take over a little. And once I'm done, like, you know, my maternity leave, I'm going to be going back to work. Who's taking care of the kids? She says, okay, I'll take care of them. I'm home anyways, right? She goes, okay, no problem. And they start this new routine. And a few months in, he goes, yeah, this is not for me. I'm not able to take care of them. He goes, so what are we going to do? He goes, listen, how about I go back to the kollel because the rabbi knows me well, my Rosh Yeshiva. He's been, you know, doing me this favor for all these years. My parents think I'm in kollel. I'm going to go back and I'll just learn like 2 hours in the morning and the money that they give me will pay for hired help. She goes, great, that's an amazing idea. And he starts, and obviously those 2 hours turn into 4 hours, 5 hours. And this Torah that he thought he had left behind, just like, it was like a flame that restarted, and he starts learning all day. And she obviously gets back, you know, what she had asked for. And slowly, slowly, she sees the growth happening. And she says, listen, whatever, and the whole way through, she keeps telling him, whatever you decide, it's Kodesh Kodeshim to me, no problem. And it turns into full days, and she sees finally her husband is coming back with this love for it. It wasn't like, I'm just collecting the money. And today, he is one of the greatest, they don't say his name out of respect for the story, he's the greatest Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. It's a real story. And on their 10th anniversary, he came to his wife with a beautiful and very expensive candle, Shabbat candle tray and sticks and everything. And he said to her, I wanted to give you something that you're going to light because you lit up my life again, and this is going to light up our home. And that's the pearl. She didn't expect it. She didn't sign up for it. But she became something greater inside it. She didn't run from it. And that's where, in my own journey as well, I began to take this shift. And a lot of the times we say we're being tested. You know, Hashem tests us and in things that he knows we can overcome. And for a long time, I liked that. I was like, wow, thank you, Hashem. You're sending me a good test. Like, this is a test. Don't worry, Hashem's testing you. If you know it's a test, then you're already halfway there because it's like, I know I'm being tested. And at one point in my journey, I remember that actually started triggering me and feeling like, why are you testing me? And a lot of those feelings come around Rosh Hashanah. Like, why is it fearful? It's not a test. And I started to realize you're being trusted. Very different from a test. Hashem saw your neshama and he said, you can carry a specific light into this world only through you. And I'm trusting you with this light. That's what this challenge is bringing. When you're forming that pearl, you're being trusted. You're not being tested. Tested is this like above me and you got to pass or fail. And again, that judgment court and the balancing out, that's not what it is. And then the question of why me, which I've had many times in my life, starts to shift in saying, not why me, what light does Hashem see in me that I haven't met in myself yet? And I will meet that light. But he sees something and I need to discover it too. And that's where pain starts to become a holy language. It's a holy conversation between who I thought I was and who Hashem knows I can be. You are literally talking to Hashem. And I started looking at every test, which now I call everything I've been trusted with. And I started saying, wow, I'm being pointed. It's a conversation. Hashem is literally talking to me. I made you. I know what you're made out of. I'm trying to make you find out what you're made out of. And this is a conversation. And that's when we stop waiting for the life to get back to normal. Like, once this pain is over, I'm just going to be myself again. And again, I'm never belittling the feeling of pain. But these are tools to realize and reframe it, that we don't want to rush out and package up the pain into a bow. Sometimes we got to sit in it because it's the most holy conversation and intimate conversation that we can be having with Hashem. And Rabbi Wallerstein talks about, he was in a synagogue once. He was praying and he hears the chazan praying, this elderly man. And it was so much simcha. He was literally dancing as he's praying. He was like in his own world. And he asked someone, you know, who is that? He's amazing. So he's actually a Holocaust survivor and he's been praying here for years. And I'm telling you, when you experience a prayer with him, you've never experienced a prayer like this. He says, I need to talk to him. So after the prayer, he goes up to him and he says, listen, I'm sorry. I couldn't help but notice how you prayed. It's incredible. I never had a prayer like this. And I want to know, like, where does the simcha come from? You know, you went through so much, let alone to be in a synagogue, but with joy and be talking to Hashem. And where's this connection coming from? And he says to him, Rabbi Wallerstein, sit down. I need to tell you. He says, when the war ended, I'll never forget, I had only one question. He said, I remember it was the first night that everything was over. And I look up into the sky and he said, my eyes were burning with tears because yes, the war ended, but my life just began of pain. All that I experienced was just starting. And he says, my eyes were burning. And he said, I had one question for Hashem. He said, it wasn't, why did you take 6 million? It wasn't, where were you? It wasn't, why did you leave me? He said, I asked one thing. Why am I still here? Why did you choose me to survive? And then he looked at Rabbi Wallerstein and he said, and I remember whispering to Hashem this one line, this exact words, I don't want to change them. He said, and this stayed with me forever. I told Hashem, I don't know why you saved me, but I promise you this. I will prove to you that you made the right choice. I will live a life that makes you proud that you gave me another day. He didn't waste his survival. He didn't drown in the unanswerable, which would have been totally, totally understandable. He stood in the middle of actual ashes, literal ashes, and he said, what light can I build right now? What pearl can I form? And those were the chapters that he didn't choose, but they chose him. There are chapters in our lives that we don't choose, but they choose you. And somewhere in the middle of that pain, I realized I'm being pointed by Hashem, pointed towards what only my soul could bring into this world for myself, for my family, for my friends, for my community, and for all of Am Yisrael. So how do we do this? Now we're going to jump into the Torah examples of this. Hashem filled his Torah not just with laws and stories, but with lives. And when we realize that these are raw and unfiltered real stories of tzaddikim, and I touched a bit about this earlier, it's the craziest thing. Like we said, we know the ending. But these people didn't. And if I told you today, you could sit in front of David HaMelech and ask him, how did it feel like, you know, the nights that you were crying? Or Esther HaMalka, how did it feel like, you know, being chosen? Purim was the span of like years. This wasn't like, we know the ending. Imagine being in the palace of this gross anti-Semitic king. Like all these stories, if I told you, you could sit with Esther and ask her anything, sit with Miriam and ask her anything, Avraham, Sarah, everyone. You'd say that's crazy. Of course, like we'll fly everywhere for brachot, for, you know, tzaddik, but this is what we have. The stories in the Torah are not stories. They are unfiltered thought processes of the greatest people who have ever lived. And when we look at it from that lens, we realize that every pause, every cry, every letter, every description, it becomes a masterclass in Avodat Hashem and how to serve Hashem. And it's not just inspiration, it's instructions. It's a blueprint. We are given blueprints of how to live like tzaddikim. Directly from them. No chain was broken. That's what the Torah is. So we're going to start with Abraham, because we did talk about the Akedah, and it's a theme. And like we said, we're going to go a little more briefly on him because we did touch upon it at the beginning. He had 3 days. 3 days of, I don't even want to know what emotions were going through his mind of walking towards there. And it says that he saddled his own donkey. He ran. But you know the emotions he must have had as a father. Even if he knew he was doing it for Hashem, he still has to deal with, he didn't tell his wife. That's a big deal to go and break something like that to your wife. Tell his own son. And every Rosh Hashanah, like we said, those difficult days produce the merit and the zichut that Hashem will get up from his throne of judgment and go to his throne of mercy. So millions and millions and millions of Jews are able to still have protection and mercy from Hashem because of Avraham. It became eternal compassion. If you look at Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he had 13 years in a cave. And I can do millions of characters. We're going to touch on a few only. 13 years hidden in the cave. No comfort, no community, no certainty, nothing. Can you imagine if a Gadol Ador today goes missing, like all of a sudden? The WhatsApp chats, the tailing going, like everyone's going to be praying. And it looks like after 13 years, you're going to think, okay, God forbid, he must have, you know, got killed. We just can't find him. Our prayers are not being answered. It's 13 years. Yet Hashem was saying, I'm hearing it. It's building a cloud. I promise you, every tear, every prayer is being collected. But Rabbi Shimon right now is writing the Zohar. And what we're told is that the Zohar is literally like a light for Am Yisrael's eyes for all of eternity. And if Rabbi Shimon would have got out any bit earlier, we would not have the Zohar today. So the challenge wasn't just worth it. It was literally the channel for everything. David HaMelech, he didn't write Tehillim from a palace. He wrote Tehillim from caves, from people chasing him to kill him, his own son, from betrayal, from heartbreak. He documented all of it. And for the rest of history, the entire Jewish nation clings to this book in any desperate time. It's our lifeline. And it literally is his personal prayers to Hashem. Every emotion is found in that book. So he didn't just give us songs, he gave us a map of how to speak to Hashem. His challenges turned into a lifeline for us. Moshe Rabbeinu. We sometimes forget, but he had every reason to say no, to save Am Yisrael. Said, I have a stutter. I was raised outside of them. I wasn't even in slavery. Like, who am I to go and relate to them? I was raised in the palace by the very people making them suffer. He was misunderstood. He was rejected. He was slandered. Everything you could think of. And Hashem needed a leader, it was specifically him, that experienced and felt everything. Why? So when the Jews would come to him later in the desert and say, I was abandoned, or anyone would come and say, oh, I feel like this, I feel that, he understood every emotion in the book because he went through it. And that's exactly what it took to be a leader, because he could say, so was I. I told him, no, sit down, come. There's room for you with Hashem, even with that feeling. He had every emotion in the book. Most importantly, was about the stutter, when he said, you know, you're going to talk to one of the biggest kings in today's world. Send someone that speaks well. You know, you send a politician that has the right words, that has, you know, could come up and really convince people. What are you sending me for? He's the master of the world. Hashem could have said, you know what, you're right. Let me just fix your stutter, now go. He could fix anything. Hashem didn't fix his stutter. He said, go as you are. Those were his words. Exactly how you are is how you need to go. My strength starts when yours ends. Yours is a stutter, that's it. That's the max you can go, no problem. I'm coming in. So that's another message of that muscle. Sarah Aminu, we know the pain of waiting. And we know that she got a baby at 100 years old, and we know the ending. But again, Sarah had a baby at 100 years old. Like, just sit on that. It's crazy. Can we imagine? She wasn't this person that, like, became this introvert and sat to herself and just, like, stayed in her problem. She was the home that was open on all sides of her house was open for people to come in. And this wasn't a year process, 5 years. This was decades and decades that she's waiting for something. Could you imagine the conversations of, like, so, how's it going? You know, when are you planning to... She had that for years and years. And yet, she held on. And she kept clinging to Hashem, and she built her home as a place of holiness. And she didn't know the ending. But Hashem was saying, you're not just becoming the mother of Yitzchak, you're becoming the mother of a nation. I need you to wait a little bit longer. That's the pearl that's being formed. Yosef couldn't save a nation until he was first sold forgotten, misunderstood. He was sold by his own brothers. Imagine living in the biggest home of a tzaddik, like the biggest tzaddikim of the time. He's learning all day. He was the favorite. He went from the youngest in the family to all of a sudden being sold into slavery. He was a number. He literally became a number in a palace. And when his brothers finally came at that reunion they had, he said, "You think you sold me? I was sent. You can't hurt me. My story is between me and Hashem. This is my muscle. It's not yours." And that's why he had no resent. Obviously, it's a very high level, but he had no resent for them because he knew he was being sent. He wasn't sold. And the last character we're going to talk about is Rivka. Rivka had in her stomach both Esav and Yaakov. And a lot of people ask, why did Hashem need to make Esav? And especially coming from the same mother, why did she have to hold up two of the most opposite worlds? And the Midrash tells us, Esav's existence is to keep Am Yisrael awake. He pushes us to fight harder, to pray deeper, to get closer. It's hard, but that's what he does. And even the enemy is part of Hashem's plan. Even the enemy is for our Geula. And Rivka raised greatness in the middle of literally evil from her own son. She became the mother of a child that would carry the name of Yisrael. But only after she carried the weight of struggling with a child that wasn't Yisrael at all. So her womb didn't just birth a son. Hashem was saying, I know it's hard, but you're birthing the battle that's going to carry all of Am Yisrael. So sometimes the greatest power comes from our deepest wounds. And you're not just surviving, you are being prepared. And you're being trusted. And when you rise and stand tall, it's not despite what you're going through, it's because of what you're going through. There's a story of this farmer, it's a mashal, and his name was Yaakov. And he lived in a small home outside the city. He liked to be to himself, he had a farm, and you couldn't find his house unless you knew where it was. If you didn't know him, you're not finding it. So he liked to be alone. He knew every corner, every inch of his farm by heart. He'd wake up to the same routine. And in front of his home, there was this big 15-ton boulder. He doesn't know. It's just always been there. He doesn't remember when he got there. It was just always there from when he moved in. And he never touched it. He never looked at it. One morning, he wakes up and he hears this voice saying, "Yaakov, Yaakov." And he's like, "Who's here? Nobody ever comes here. Nobody knows me." He loves his routine. He loves his alone time. And says, "This is Hashem. I'm here to talk to you." He goes, "Hashem, what are you doing in my house?" He says, "I have one request from you, please, if you can do me a favor." It's a favor for God? Of course. What do you need? He says, "I need you to go outside. You know that 15-ton boulder you have in your house for so many years? I need you to go and push the boulder." He says, "The boulder?" He says, yeah. "For a half hour today, just push the boulder." "Okay, no problem." And he goes, he starts pushing, gets on with his day, continues his routine. And now this starts to happen every day for a year. Hashem comes, "Yaakov, Yaakov, 30 minutes, go push the boulder." Great. Without questions, he goes and he's pushing. Now one day, after a year of this going on, he hears a new voice come, "Yaakov, Yaakov." And he's like, "Who is that?" He says, "This is the Satan." He says, "The Satan? No, 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 you gotta leave, you gotta leave." He says, "No, no, no, I get a bad rep, I know. Calm down, I promise you. I want the best for everyone. I'm really a good person. And I just get this bad rep. I'm here to protect you. And I just want you to know what's really happening when you're pushing that boulder." He says, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Did the boulder ever move since you started?" He goes, "No, you're right. No, I mean, it's 15-ton boulder. I'm not moving that." He goes, "So what are you doing?" He says, "God asked me to do something. I don't care. I'm just going to do it." He says, "Yeah, I want to tell you why. I'm going to give you a little bit behind the scenes. Is that every day for 30 minutes in Shemayim, and I just want you to know, every time I get to this part of the story, so many people, like even myself included, will giggle about it because it sounds like such a funny conversation, but really, the Yetzer Hara does this to us in a much more sophisticated way." He says, "For 30 minutes, the angels gather, and they need comedy relief. Hashem needs everybody to, you know, have a little break from their day, so they come and watch this fool Yaakov, who will never push a boulder, and still does it." He goes, "What? Me? I'm comedy relief?" He goes, "Yeah, that's the pure reason why this boulder is there, and Hashem comes to you every day. And that's what you've been used for. You know, someone needs to give them a break, and it's you." He says, "I can't believe this." The next day, Hashem comes again. "Yaakov, Yaakov," he goes, "I'm not your guy anymore. I'm sorry. Choose somebody else. I'm nobody's comedy relief. I'm not pushing that boulder." And he goes, "Yaakov, but we've been doing this every day. What's going on?" He says, "I know what you're doing. Everyone's gathering to laugh at me." He goes, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "I'm never going to move that boulder. What's the purpose of this? I'm not doing it until I know the purpose." And Hashem says to him, "Did I ask you to move the boulder? That's my job. I asked you to push the boulder. And since the world has been created, there has never been a better boulder pusher than you." "Really? Me? Oh, okay. And he starts pushing. And then the Satan comes back the next day. And this fluctuating arguing between Hashem and the Satan coming, and he feels, I'm the best boulder pusher, and the comedy relief, and they're going back and forth. And all of a sudden his mind goes crazy, and he says, I can't take this anymore. One day I'm on top, one day I feel the worst. Maybe I need to go into town and see people. Maybe I'm delusional at this point. And he starts walking into town, and as he's walking in, he hears someone screaming, help, help, and it's still at the parts of town where no one would normally pass by. So he's like, whoa, who's here? And he sees this woman, and she says, she's running over to him. Listen, my husband, we work in construction, and our truck is filled with all our cement and construction material. And he was changing the tire, and the truck completely fell down. And he's under my truck, and I hear him. He's alive, but he's stuck. And Yaakov runs, goes to the truck in panic, and he says, yeah, I can't get into town to go get help. If I go into town, your husband's not making it. She goes, you don't get it. Look at the construction material. Like, you're not picking up this truck. You need to run into town and get help. She goes, ma'am, I'm so sorry, but if we don't do this right now, your husband's not here. She goes, but there's 500 pounds of cement. And he says, we don't have time. And he runs to the back of the truck. He starts to dig his heels into the ground. And he's pushing and he's pushing. And every muscle that he just used for the last year, pushing that 15-ton boulder, lifts up this truck and saves her husband. And she looks at him and says, who are you? Thank you. I don't even know how to thank you. Like, what did you just do? And you just saved his life through like the literal impossible. And Yaakov smiled and he said, I'm not superhuman. Don't think me. Think a 15-ton boulder that never moved. Because every muscle I used to save your husband came from pushing what I thought was pointless. Hashem never asked us to move the boulder. He asked us to push it. Hashem doesn't only see what you're going through. He sees what's on the other side. He doesn't just see the storm that you're going through. He sees the breakthrough. He sees the shore. We need to trust his view. And I remind myself every day when you wake up, Modei Ani is not just thank you Hashem for giving me another day. It's thank you for emunatecha, for your faith in me. And what does that mean? I didn't just wake up. Hashem, the master of the world, chose me again today. What does that mean? It wasn't automatic. It wasn't by default. It was a choice. And really, let's break that down. The master of the world woke up today because every day he renews creation. He decides the sun is going to rise again. What we call nature is literally he's redoing it every single day. And that includes us. So he gets up and he looks at his whole world because he doesn't have anything extra. And he says, you, with everything you're carrying, with everything you're still figuring out, all the unpolished chapters, your season that you're in right now, you, I want you here today. Not only I want you here, my world needs you today exactly as you are. Let that just sit in your bones, exactly as you are. Just like Moshe, go as you are. The world needs you to be exactly who Hashem created you to be. Because anything less leaves the world incomplete, literally. And that's why every morning when we say, HaMechin Mitzadei Gavar, Hashem prepares the footstep of man. What are we saying? Even the ones I didn't want to take. Even the ones that look like nothing that I prayed for. Even the ones that feel like I'm falling apart. These are the exact footsteps that we're thanking Hashem for because we're saying I'm not falling apart, I'm falling into place. And I remind myself that Hashem stretches your strength so that you can feel your own resilience. Hard seasons, they're not the setbacks. They're not when life crushes you, it's when life is trying to crown you. It's the weight that you're carrying, it's not to break you, it's stretching your soul's edges. So now the big question that we're going to close off with is, how do we hold on? We get it. It's a muscle. It's beautiful. It's a pearl that's forming. It's a process. But sometimes the process of you know, it's not the 3 days of Avraham. It could be years. It could be a long process of whatever we're waiting for, whatever we're stuck in, or whatever we didn't choose. How do we hold on in that? And this is the final ingredient that nothing that I just said could ever work without it. It's not that Hashem doesn't give us anything we can't handle. I remember I used to hear that line a lot. Hashem doesn't give you anything you can't handle. And I would say, it's great, but it feels a little triggering because there's so many parts of my life I absolutely cannot handle. And I'm like, so what am I doing wrong here? Because there are so many parts I can't handle. And I started to feel, instead of comfort, it felt like a failure. I felt a little bit of shame, like, what's going on? And where's all that emunah that I thought I had? Like, what's going on? And it's because it's not complete. Hashem doesn't give you anything you can't handle together with him. Hashem is telling you, I gave you a mountain that I'm going to climb with you. I will never throw you into there without giving you my hand first. And that's what it means, siyata dishmaya. Siyata dishmaya is not like luck and we got lucky, Hashem was on our side. Or again, going back to this fear of like Rosh Hashanah, the judgment, and like, oh, the scales outweighed, I won, now Hashem's with me. It's so not that. It's Hashem saying, you don't need to be the expert. You don't need to have it all figured out. You just need to show up with your maximum, and I'll step in and do the rest. Because when Hashem is your partner, you have no limits. Whatever is your limits, they don't disqualify you. They become a stage for Hashem's strength. So Hashem always tells us, when your strength ends, mine begins. So the first thing that we have to unlearn about this partnership, of this co-partnering with Hashem, where I'm not finite anymore, I attach to the infinite, what's the first thing we have to unlearn is that not knowing is a weakness. And let's delve into that. We were created as human beings that we like certainty. I have yet to meet someone, even if you're laid back, even if you're like chill and you don't need schedule, we like to know what's going to happen. We like predictability, don't we? And it's so funny because I remember feeling after my mom, after my dad, and after other challenges I had, not just grief, thinking, but life is the most unpredictable thing. And yet we are built to crave predictability. So how does that work? Did Hashem just say, like, set us up for failure and is just sitting there laughing? And I'm like, no, obviously not. And it's because He knows that He created us with that craving. And He's saying, don't worry. I know that you crave predictability. And some parts of your life will be predictable. You have a certain job. You have a certain schedule. There's parts of our day that we can look and say, it's predictable. We know. I'm going to bite into this apple. I'm going to eat. I'm going to drink water. I'm going to feel satisfied. Hashem gives a lot of predictable factors. But there are parts that are not predictable. And Hashem says, don't worry. I know how you're built. I will give you something that's always predictable. And that's me. Emuna. Emuna is Hashem saying, you can always count on me. I am constant. I am predictable. Emuna teaches us that there's one thing that we always do know. It's Hashem. That's a relationship to build. We don't just let go and let God without knowing who He is. But that's when we begin to shift from the problem to the problem solver. And Emuna is Hashem whispering, I am your constant. When everything else shifts, I don't. So Emuna is standing in the middle of something that's completely dark and saying, the whole world could be falling apart around me, but nothing changes who you are and who you are to me. The big key is who you are to me. We have to develop that. We don't just turn this mode on. And that's the answer to this ache for certainty, for the pain of becoming. It's not about knowing the plan. It's about knowing the one who holds the plan. And there's no better person that I learned this from than a Holocaust survivor named Oma. She grew up in Germany, and just before the war had started, what did the Nazis start to do? They began to take every community, they would strip them of all their leaders, the rabbis and all their role models. And the point was it was really a psychological warfare at the beginning of like, you see, you guys have nobody, and stripping them of everything. And then they began to put them into the ghettos where they had to stay in restricted areas, and they also had a ration of food. And they had a grocery list of, I mean, not even a list, but a couple of things that they were allowed per month. And Oma was saying that she was allowed, amongst the three other things, was 4 eggs per month. And she was newly married to her husband, Alex. And she said, Alex, you know what? Who knows what life we're leading into right now? This is crazy. We have no more rabbis. We have no more anything. Our community's gone. We're just another number. Every week, Friday, we're going to pretend like the world that we're living in just doesn't exist. It's Shabbat. And this egg is going to be for a cake, whatever I can make with one egg, for Shabbat. Lichvod Shabbat. Everything else will survive during the week how we can eat. But this egg, we're not touching it till Friday. And every Friday, she would go and make that cake. One Friday, the first Friday of that month, she cracks open the egg, and out comes blood. Now she looks and says, technically, it's not kosher. I have no rabbis to ask. I'm in a war zone. We have a ration of food. Maybe I could just, scoop out the blood and use it. And she starts to scoop it out. She says, no. My husband trusts me with the kosher of my home. I can't do it. And then she's going to the garbage. She said, we don't even have food. Like, what are we going to do? I don't even have someone I could ask. And I don't know what the real halacha is. But she's going back and forth and back and forth. And she's going to the garbage and coming back. And then finally she says, no. This halacha was from Hashem. And I know my relationship with Him. She goes to the garbage and dumps it. Now the next impossible decision is, what do I do? Do I open the egg of next week? And she says, you know what? Who knows where we'll be next week? She cracks open the egg. And out comes 2 yolks. And she says, these were her exact words. She says, sometimes Hashem sends you a small message, but it lasts a lifetime. She said when she saw that second yolk, she's like, I heard Hashem telling me, my daughter, I saw. No one would have known, no one would have saw, but I knew. I know how loyal you are to me. And I saw your loyalty. And because of your loyalty, I'm right here being loyal to you, and I already planned the next best step. And I always wondered, how do you take a decision like that? How do you risk everything for one quiet moment with Hashem? And the answer is, you don't decide that in one moment. You live with Hashem every single day, so that when that moment comes, you just know. Oma didn't understand. She had the least amount of predictability, the least amount of certainty. But she said, the one thing that I always know is Hashem. He never changes. And that's the truth about Emunah. It doesn't demand that we have all the answers. It reminds us that we never needed them to begin with. For me, in my grieving, I remember at one point saying, you know, you have such a big pain, you don't even know where to hold it, that you say, if I just get the answers, maybe the pain will go away. And the truth is, the pain won't go away. I'll just get all the answers and I'll still be in the same pain. And that's when I realized I don't need answers. I needed closeness. I needed connection. Sometimes you call a friend and you just, you know, you ran to them and they don't have a solution for you, but you feel so much better because sometimes you don't need answers. You need closeness. You need relationship. But what makes it special is the relationship with Hashem is infinite. And that's what Rabbi Wallerstein taught. Emunah is a product of a relationship. You don't have a relationship that builds Emunah. Emunah is the result of that relationship. It's not a subject you study. It's not a light switch you flip on when things get hard. It's a muscle that's strengthened through closeness. And you can't skip the wrestle. You have to cry to Him yourself. You have to lean on Him yourself when there's nothing else to lean on. You have to fall apart in His arms. You have to earn that Emunah and live it, because that's the only way to build on it. And the more you build on it, the less answers you're going to start needing in life. Because it stops being about what Hashem does, and it starts being about who He is. And only then does Emunah stop becoming an idea, and it starts becoming a home. It becomes a home where answers don't matter anymore, because knowing Him is enough. The most powerful shift for me in my Emunah is when I realized, the moment we believe that we need to understand everything, is the moment that we make Hashem small enough to fit into our minds. What does that mean? If Hashem is something that you understand everything and you always have clarity about why He's doing things and how He's doing things and you understand every part of the plan, then He would be small enough to just fit your mind. And I remember there was Rabbi Mansur would say, how lucky am I to have a God that I don't understand? Because if I understood everything He does, then He would be as small as my brain. I want a God that's deeper than me. And it's exactly because Hashem doesn't fit so neatly into my logic. It's exactly because He's beyond my fears. It's exactly that He's not limited by my pain. He's not limited by my doubts. He's above me. He's beyond me. It's exactly that that makes Him trustworthy of my trust. That's what makes it trustworthy, is that we can't understand Him. And that's when I realized it's not avoiding, like, okay, let me look at all the parts, which is great. It's so important. Some people will tell me, like, you know, write a journal of all the times Hashem was there for you, which is so beautiful and it is very powerful. But I started saying that that's still not all there yet, because then the parts where you don't understand them, you're like, let me just run back to where I did have clarity. No. It's understanding that exactly because I don't understand them, oh my gosh, I have someone so much bigger than me that I'm allowed and trusted with to connect to. And I started looking at all the moments that were so dark with zero clarity and saying to myself, first, the way I got there was, this is actually where this prayer for me was born, and I call it the I don't know prayer. I sit down and I make a list of everything I don't know, because I'm human and I crave certainty also. And Hashem created us with that, and I know that He validates that feeling. It's a feeling that needs to be validated, and I sit down and I write all the I don't knows. And I really let it out with full emotion, with detail. At the end of that session with Hashem, I stand at the end and I say, I don't know, but You know. And every I don't know that I can't finish the sentence, You can. And instead of, why me? I say, with You, Hashem. One of my favorite lines is, the reason why God doesn't reveal His entire plan to you at once is because if He did, then you would get peace from the information rather than from your relationship with Him. So maybe faith, yes, it's my favorite line. The reason why God, Hashem, doesn't reveal His entire plan to you at once is because if He did, then you would get peace from the information rather than from the relationship with Him. Emunah is not about getting answers. It's about letting his presence be enough for you. Because every time I hit that place where there's zero information, where really there's nothing, I started telling myself, this is actually the best place because there's no clarity, there's no plan B. This is the only time that I could stand before Hashem in full sincerity and say, Hashem, I have nothing else to trust in but you. You can't say that when there's a little bit, when he gives you a little bit of information, and sometimes he knows we need it, so it's okay. But when you're in a place where there is zero information, you have the chance to say, Hashem, I don't need information. Who you are to me is enough. And sometimes I whisper Hashem when it's a little hard for me to get to that. I hear Hashem whispering to me, my daughter, can I just be enough for you? Just this one time, let me be enough. Just let me be enough. That's what he's asking. When he puts us in a situation that has no clarity, no way out, and it looks impossible, and we're trying to build that muscle, we're trying to hold on. He's not trying to say like, ha, I got you, there's nothing. He's trying to tell you, please let me be enough for you. And that's where the loneliest parts of my world started to feel like a space, a home between me and Hashem. And that's the secret of Elul. If there's one thing I could leave you with today, it's not about walking into Rosh Hashanah with fear. It's not about walking in with answers. It's not about trying to get the best signature on our, you know, on our judgment. It's about walking in with the muscle that you built in the dark. That's what you're bringing to Hashem Rosh Hashanah. Every pearl of your life, every irritation that came in that you turned into a beauty or that you're still turning into a beauty. Every boulder that you just kept pushing, even when it didn't move. Every I don't know that you ended it off with, sometimes sincerely and sometimes faking it till you make it, but you know Hashem. Those are not failures. Those are the very steps that rise to Shemayim, and just like Abraham, take him off his throne of judgment and put him onto his throne of mercy. And if Abraham's 3 days of silence, of emunah, of taking that step forward, protect us thousands of years later, yes, even on his level, then we cannot dare think that our steps are too small. We can't. We can't let those tears go into just pain, because again, pain without purpose breaks us. Pain with purpose builds us. We are a pearl. And the truth is that we can handle everything together with him. Not because we're unbreakable, but because he is our constant. And when your strength runs out, his begins. And that's what Emunah really is. It's not blind faith. It's the wrestle that turns into a partnership with Hashem. It's the muscle that's only built when you lean into his arms and you refuse to let go. So this year, when the shofar blows, I ask of you to have one thing in mind. Don't just hear the shofar. Hear all the steps that you took, every prayer, every tear that you wrestled with Hashem. And know that Hashem is collecting all of it now. That's not fear. This is the most beautiful part of everything coming together of the past year. This is the part where he's building you, where he's crowning you with what only your soul can bring into this world. And when we blow the shofar, we often focus on, this is where we're declaring Hashem as our king. But when you declare him as a king, you're also declaring yourself as his royal child. And we forget that piece. You are coming in as his child. If we're, Rosh Hashanah is all about crowning him, but he's telling us, but you're my children. You're taking back your royalty. You're stepping into that role confidently again for the rest of the year. Rosh Hashanah is a time to hear Hashem saying, you are mine, you are never alone, and every step that you thought was your weakness was really you becoming my strength in this world. Let's step into our power. Let's step into our neshama. The reason there's introspection now is not for fear. It's because we are trying to discover the light that Hashem already sees in us, that he trusted us with, not tested us. You are trusted. Rosh Hashanah is remembering what we are trusted with. If there's any questions, anything on the topic, not this topic, wow, feel free. Yes. Yeah, sure. The information one? Doesn't do all the information at once. The reason why Hashem doesn't reveal all